Hello, welcome back to Avila Day. In this video, I'm going to try to help you navigate the vast body of work that is available from Julius Avila that has been translated into English. I put together this extensive reading list, which you can, it's a bibliography rather, that you can find in the show notes, which has all of the works that have all of his books, including those that have not been translated into English, as well as the collections of essays and articles, and various pamphlets, a little bit more obscure. But obviously, you know, anybody confronted with a list as big as this is going to need some guidance as to, well, what do I read first? You know, what are the most important things to read? And then, you know, and then what are the things that are of more, let's just say, specialist interest? Before getting going, some of you may have seen my earlier book buying guide to Thomas Carlyle. The problem with Carlyle was that because his works have been out of copyright for so long, there are many, many editions of his works of varying quality, and I needed to pick out the best versions. In the case of Avila, there is only one edition of each of the books, and they are all very easy to find and to buy on Amazon. Practically all of these are on Amazon, and they're pretty affordable as well. As you can see, I have practically all of these books myself. So with that said, what is the first thing for the complete novice to read of Avila's that can help you get into him? Well, the first thing I'll say is that his masterpiece, which is you know, universally seen as being a revolt against the modern world, is quite a difficult book to read, especially if you have no prior experience reading esoteric writers or traditionalist writers. Avila is somebody who speaks from a wholly different point of view to anything that you're likely familiar with. He is completely outside the liberal tradition, and he is completely outside the socialist or Marxist tradition. He is a non-materialist writer, and therefore he can seem quite impenetrable to the uninitiated. For that reason, I do not recommend starting with Revolt Against the Modern World, or indeed his two other books. I mean, I should tell you that the big three in Avila are Revolt Against the Modern World, which is his metaphysics, his it's the book that basically ties all of his work together. It's his master text, if you want to put it that way. Then there is Men Among the Ruins, which is essentially his politics, and Ride the Tiger, which is essentially his ethics. So those three books give you something like his complete worldview. However, rather than jumping in and reading those straight away, I think it can be useful to read some of his shorter essays, especially those that he wrote dealing with contemporary issues, you know, in Italy, whether it's during the fascist period or after the war in the 1950s and the 1960s. The best single essay I would recommend is Orientations, 11 Points. You can find that in a handbook for right-wing youth. My buddy Skeptical Waves has also uploaded it to YouTube, so you can find an audio version there. I believe it's reprinted in A Traditionalist Confronts Fascism also. The next book I would recommend tackling after that is The Bow and the Club, which features essays on all sorts of topics, sex changes, skiing, there's an essay on jazz and the Beatles, I mean, it can be quite weird seeing Evola discussing these things. You know, to a certain point of view, it's hard to believe that Evola lived in the same world that, you know, as the Beatles. But there it is. And because we're coming from, you know, 2021 and from our modern contemporary era, and because Evola's worldview is so alien to where you may be coming from, the bow and the club can, I think, help ease you into his mindset. They're very readable essays. They're very accessible. Now, obviously, it's not an end point, but it can help transition you into his whole way of thinking on a great number of issues. So then, once you have read The Bow and the Club, you might then think about picking up The Path of Cinnabar, which it's described as a kind of autobiographical intellectual journey, something like this. But what it really is a guide by Evola to all of his works. And he describes his intellectual journey. It's almost like Evola somehow knew that he would find his audience years later, that he was leaving this legacy, and, you know, when the time was right, you know, likes of us would come along and start to read them. So it's a very good that he wrote this. It's quite rare for a writer to provide a guide to all of his works. And this is also written in quite an accessible style, at least by Evola's standards. And once you've read that, I think you could then probably venture into reading, starting on the so-called Big Three. I would actually not start with Revolt Against the Modern World, but with Men Among the Ruins. There is a very, very good introduction to that book by Dr. H.T. Hansen, which is, I mean, it's almost as long as the book itself. It's about 100 pages long, and it's a very, very comprehensive overview of Evola's life, his influences, his work, his thinking. So I'd recommend reading that. And then, you know, getting through Men Among the Ruins. Because that's a book about politics, if you're coming to Evola from a kind of political interest, and, you know, because you're, you know, on the right, rather than because you're interested in spirituality or yoga or anything like that, it's also, I guess, more familiar ground for you. So, yeah, Men Among the Ruins is a good one. Ride the Tiger is also more accessible, I would say, than Revolt. And it's a lot more, in a strange way, personal, because it's dealing with the problem of how do you live in such a nihilistic or an awful time as the one that we do now without succumbing to despair. And it's really a book-length answer to that question. It's a little bit more dense than Men Among the Ruins because there are some pretty in-depth critiques of existentialism, of Nietzsche, and various other philosophers, so it can get a little kind of abstract and philosophical in places. And then, if you've got to the point where you've gone through orientations, read Bow in the Club, still found the interest to read Men Among the Ruins and Ride the Tiger, I would then, you're probably ready to take on Revolt Against the Modern World. And then once you've finished that, really it depends on what you're interested in as to where you might go next. If your real interest is in the politics or the political side of things, then another good place to land might be his trilogy of books critiquing fascism and National Socialism. Those are Fascism Viewed from the Right, Notes on the Third Reich, and a traditionalist confronts fascism. All these books are fairly short and you'd get through them pretty quickly. The gist of them is that Evola, even though he saw some potential in the hierarchies of both fascism and National Socialism, ultimately thought they were too plebeian, too compromised by the idea of the mass man, and also in the case of the Germans, too taken with the idea of biological racism. Another book that may be of interest, if your primary attraction to Evola is because of your politics, is The Metaphysics of Power. That was brought out recently by Arctos just a couple of months ago. And there's a lot of very interesting essays in there about all sorts of things, but they're all focused around notions of state and power. Also of interest is The Metaphysics of War, which is popular with a certain audience, but that is also quite an accessible book. It's an easy, if you're military, if you're kind of a, let's just say, of a military bent, or you're interested in military history and things like that, The Metaphysics of War is also not a bad starting place for Evola, period. Although you don't really get all aspects of his thinking in that one, because he's primarily talking about what it means to go to war for a higher purpose, as opposed to more profane reasons. I'll also mention at this point Recognitions, which is kind of like a follow up to The Bow and the Club. Although the pieces in there are a little bit more, dense and academic, or of more specialist interest. So it's a little bit less accessible than The Bow and the Club, but there's still some great stuff in Recognitions as well. So next, if you're interested more in how to achieve riding the tiger, how do you actually achieve this stealing of yourself to be the man among the ruins, as Evola calls it? And Evola wrote several books on this, on how to achieve self-mastery. These are The Doctrine of the Awakening, The Yoga of Power, Eros and the Mysteries of Love, which is also kind of about gender roles as well, and the collection that was brought out, Meditations on the Peaks, which is about mountain climbing. So those four books in particular are all about techniques, methods taken from various different traditions on how to liberate yourself from the conditioned world. In The Yoga of Power, he uses the so-called left-hand path of action. In The Doctrine of the Awakening, it's the right-hand path of contemplation. Eros and the Mysteries of Love is the left-hand path again, but this time with a focus on sex, which is one of the possible paths, believe it or not. And in Meditations on the Peaks, he talks about mountain climbing, or hiking on mountains as a possible path as well. Now, Evola had quite a lot of other writings along these lines as well, essays and articles. These are, some of them are collected in the book East and West, which looks at a number of different Eastern traditions. Also, there were a number of pamphlets which were published in the early 90s, or they were translated in the early 90s, which include Taoism, the magic, the mysticism, Zen, the religion of the samurai, René Guénon, a teacher for modern times, and the path of enlightenment in the Mithraic mysteries. Now, I've not been able to find these pamphlets to buy anywhere, but the PDFs are floating around if you look hard enough for them. Another book worth mentioning here is The Fall of Spirituality, which was also known as The Mask and the Face of Contemporary Spiritualism, in which basically Evelyn mows down New Age, Satanism, various strands of occultism that he considers to be not legitimate, theosophy, and various other traditions that had grown up from the 19th century onwards. And he basically explains the problem with them, why they're not authentic from a traditional point of view. So what else is there beyond this? Well, if your interest is mainly in the esoteric, then Evola has a book on alchemy called The Hermetic Tradition, which is all about kind of sacred symbols. I must confess that as being someone who has limited experience with esoteric texts, I couldn't really get into the Hermetic tradition myself. But I know that of all of Evola's books, it's one of the ones that is spoken of most highly for the kind of quality of his research and so on. I believe even Carl Jung praised that one. Another esoteric book is The Mystery of the Grail, which is all about the quest for the Grail in Arthurian legend and elsewhere. And again, this, because I'm not really an esotericist in that way, that's another one I didn't personally get into that much, but I do know that it's spoken of highly by the people who are kind of deeply into these sorts of things. Finally, there is the question of Evola's views on race, which can be found chiefly in The Myth of the Blood, as well as Synthesis on the Doctrine of Race, of which I'm told Mussolini was said to be a fan. And indeed, when the fascist state was looking to introduce its own racial laws, I believe some element of Evola's suggestions were taken forward. And in these works, he consistently gives primacy to the idea of spirit above blood when considering race. There's also something of this in his early polemical work, Pagan Imperialism, as well as the pamphlets Three Aspects of the Jewish Problem and The Elements of a Racial Education. I do not consider these to be particularly essential works of Evola's, and he doesn't really give them that much space in the path of Cinnabar as well. One gets the impression that he was writing these works in order to kind of try to influence or work with the fascist regime at that time. Although the idea of a superior race as a kind of spirit, as an Aryan spirit, is important in his general conception of things. You can see that in Revolt Against the Modern World as well. If I was to say that his thinking is fuzzy anywhere, it is likely on this particular issue, where he appears to downplay the significance of blood or kind of biological race, but at the same time also seems to appeal to it in various times and places as well. So I get the impression that this is the part of Evola's oeuvre that is kind of least well fleshed out, so to speak. And for that reason, I would probably leave this grouping of works till last, unless you have a burning desire to understand Evola on race. And that just about sums it up. Apart from the three-volume Introduction to Magic that he did with the UR group in the late 1920s or early 30s, which I must confess that I know very little about. I have flicked through those books, but they appear to be only of interest to individuals who are looking to practice certain magical rituals. Well, if that's you, knock yourself out. So I hope this has been helpful. Evola Day will continue shortly after this. There will be a discussion of 10 key quotations from Evola's books with myself, my buddy Evelyn, Auron McIntyre, and Furious Pertinax. That's coming up very soon.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, shh, come this way. Lend me your ears. Secrets of ancient rhetoric can now be yours for a trifling sum. The art of persuasive argument is all around us. In fact, we are surrounded by it. We live in a rhetorical age, but this is seldom taught and even more seldom explained. It is not for you to know, they said. The master of grammar knows how to write with clarity, precision, and correctness. The master of logic knows how to disarm his opponents with reason alone, and both can be powerful adversaries. But the master of rhetoric can outflank both, caring as he does little for their rules and even less for their defeated tears. The master of grammar asks, is this sentence correct? Is this sentence clear? The master of rhetoric wonders, does my speech have the power to sway the passions? Can my words move the crowd? Yes, it can. Yes, it can. The master of logic trains his mind to eliminate fallacies and formulate correct and well-defined arguments. The master of rhetoric knows that the reasoning mind can be flooded with emotions, that the flood can short-circuit logic and overwhelm his opponent, who will crumple. They will wonder why their well-written, well-reasoned arguments were so defenseless against the rhetor's apparent ability to bend reality to his will. Do the faces in the crowd not see through this dark magic? The master of rhetoric laughed at their wonder. He looked at the bemused, despairing face of the master of logic and spoke. Harness that wonder, my friend. It was your own beloved Socrates who said, the only true wisdom is in knowing that you know nothing. And wonder is the beginning of wisdom. He turned to the master of grammar. So lucid and correct your prose, but why does nobody listen to you? It was your own favourite, George Orwell, who wrote, perhaps a lunatic was simply a majority of one. Do not rail at the crowd for what is in their nature. Understand what they are, and they will listen to you. And with that, the master of rhetoric was gone. Find out what else he has to say by signing up to Foundations of Rhetoric. Fulfill your destiny and complete the Trivium. Be sure to like this video and subscribe, and if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.